Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm speaking with Mike Kohler, fourth generation leader of Kohler Coating, a company with roots stretching back more than 120 years. Kohler Coating builds rod coaters and thin film applicators for the corrugated paper industries, serving several global players in the industry. The company has really seen it all, from the Great Depression to the steel industry collapse of the early 2000s, yet it continues to thrive through resilience, reinvention, and unshakable family commitment to innovation. Today, Mike is leading the next chapter, overseeing record growth, expanding global reach, and preparing for full succession into the CEO role by 2027. Mike, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thanks, Ed. I really appreciate it, and that's great to be here.
Great to have you here. So let's start at the beginning. Few companies make it four generations, let alone 120 years. Talk about your early memories. What do you remember about being a young kid growing up around the family business?
I think the earliest memories I have are back in the early 90s when CAD was kind of just starting to take off, of walking through our engineering draftsman's room and seeing the engineers drawing by hand what probably would take them for an assembly drawing, you know, weeks to today, you know, maybe a couple hours. So seeing that transformation is kind of a cool part for me personally. But that's really my earliest memories, and honestly, kind of running around through the hallways of our offices at that point. The expression I tell most people is I've kind of been breathing paper dust since I could walk. So that's really where it starts.
Okay. So pretty young when you first recall exposure to the family business.
Yes.
Okay. So your family story in particular, and this is really interesting, just has this incredible range from paper machinery to steel coating lines to even owning an airline in the 1920s. The company, there was it's Kohler Airlines, right? Or Kohler Air?
Correct. Yeah.
So talk about that for a moment and just how that history maybe shaped your perspective on this whole idea of reinvention and risk.
I think when I first think about it, it's pretty remarkable from the standpoint of, first of all, for some family to be in the same industry that spans 100 years. But it's more of it's hard to believe, I think, is the biggest or best way to put it in general. But I think on how it shapes me personally today is I've got a really big sense of pride. You know, I got a nameplate on some machinery that's 40 to 50 years old, still out in the field running in some places. I know we still have, at least on the coating side, I know there's some equipment out there that even spans deeper than that, but there's a real sense of pride there that I think, you know, believe me, I get probably two or three offers a year to go and work for somebody else. And I couldn't imagine doing this for anybody else at this point, especially just having those deep roots. And I think I said this to you earlier is I don't know if it's just, we don't know how to do anything else, or this is just really what, you know, my family's meant to do is we're meant to build, you know, machinery, and we think we build them like brick houses. And that's what I like to do. And it's what my dad and my grandfather and my great grandfather have done. So why not for the fourth generation do that as well?
Awesome. So there's been some great moments in that legacy, but there were also some hard times too. So notably in the early 2000s, that was a bit of a turning point where the business hit a bit of a rocky patch, and it was almost like kind of a rebuilding of the organization. So reflect on that period for a moment, Mike. How did that impact you? How did that shape your perspective, or maybe your father's perspective? And what did you take away from that whole episode?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'll speak for my dad here a little bit. I think from the standpoint of, you know, there was probably some mindset that we were invincible. We had been around for so long. It kind of gives you that perspective that nothing is forever. I need to really probably touch more on kind of the resiliency, specifically when it comes to my dad. Mm-hmm. My dad, Herb, really, in a lot of ways, when most people would quit, just would not. And to be, you know, I was 10 at the time. I can tell you, I have very vivid memories of what that situation looked like and how it went down, and having a better perspective of today of looking back at it. I had a really solid role model to look at as you're navigating some really horrible waters that you want to get out of as fast as possible. And, you know, I can tell you, when we restarted the company on the paper side, I got a really firsthand look into what the business was as a 10-year-old, because that business started out of my parents' house or my childhood home. And my dad guided that ship and has guided that ship for the last 25 years. And we've been in the black each of those 25 years. And it's really given me probably in some instances too much hyper paranoia in some regards. But I think that also truthfully, it gives me a very large edge to keep my ear to the ground at all times. But I can't probably give you enough of a, this was my dad doing this, and I can't thank him enough. I hope he sees this, truthfully. I don't know if he will. And because I can tell you, he and I have never had this conversation. So I hope to be able to at least have him know this side of it, that, you know, I was well aware of what was going on. And especially from the perspective, I've got four young kids at home today. I have no clue how he and my mom, and that's one other person that I definitely need to really thank, because my mom was as much a part of that business and keeping the ship and the trains on time as we kind of navigated those waters. So I hope they see this, and I hope they realize, because, and getting back to the point of, I really had an impactful childhood because of them and seeing what it takes to run a business and seeing the sacrifices made. Mm-hmm. And that's really why I think we're seeing a lot of the growth that we are today is that we just, you know, our family motto is we don't quit. And that's really what stems and where we are today as to why we're still here and how we've made it through this long for four generations.
That's so much of what you said, Mike, resonates for me personally. And our season in hell was probably the year 2008 during the Great Recession.
Yeah.
It was the first time that it ever occurred to me, you know, being young and full of energy, that, you know, through no doing of my own, our business could potentially fail, because we're watching businesses drop left and right, you know. And, you know, I was sitting in our living room, and this is kind of coming down on me and occurred to me. Obviously, we didn't fail because we just hit our 61st year. So we navigated that.
Congratulations.
But in that moment, I started to cry. And I have twins. And at the time, they were very young. And my son, you know, was just, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years old. He comes up to me and he said, "Don't cry, Daddy." And he handed me this little toy army soldier. And I took that damn thing and I carried that in my pocket for probably the next 2 years. As a reminder of this is what I'm fighting for. You know, I'm fighting for this family. I'm fighting for my team. I'm fighting for the legacy of Delia Associates. And, you know, I would share, and I understand that sentiment, this refusal to quit. You know, and I see the same drive and passion, you know, has passed into you. And you saw it play out firsthand, and it obviously left an impression. And I'd say a good one, given where you're taking the company now. So yet, you know, when you first kind of came into the business, it wasn't, okay, Mike, here's the keys, go ahead, have at it. It was, if I'm not mistaken, you had to prove yourself a little bit, right? You had to show you had what it took. So talk about some of those early years when you kind of came in and stepped in full time.
Well, I think I had shared this with you, but I had first said I was never going to work for the company as a teenager and as a college student as well.
Yep.
But
Me
there,
too, by the way. Yeah, we both made that declaration. Obviously, we were both wrong.
right. Yeah, it's funny about that, right? That's, but it, I would say, you know, my I had to beg my dad to let me come into the company. I really wanted. I was trying to make it on my own, and as far as what I wanted to do, I was a little uncertain on that. But there, you know, it was, you need to go work for somebody else. You need to go figure out what you want to do. And through that, over a span of about 2 years, because there's a real rule for at least there was for my dad and I, you weren't going to join the company directly after college. You need to go work for somebody to basically, one, show you this is why you want to work for a family business. And two, this is you earning the right to even think that you can come work for the family business. So I did that. And truthfully, I mean, he didn't make it the easiest, but it was a, I had to beg him to let me come and just try to do sales work for us. And I, you know, I on and off through college, I was doing small jobs here and there. I, you know, anything from, you know, oh, we need to have you know, turn a wrench over here, or you need to go clean up this over here, you know, small stuff, but it was nothing that where I was really contributing to the day-to-day operations of the family business. So 2 years after school, I finally got to come on as a technical sales associate for us. And that's really where I got my, I would say, official start within the company to where I was actually a employee for the company.
So if you look back today, I mean, you know, understanding that policy, hey, you got to go somewhere else first. Do you, when you look back, you're like, hey, that was a good idea. I get it now. I appreciate why that is the way it is. Like, do you have a different perspective on that, or how do you, when you look back at that, how do you feel?
I am happy I did it from the
Okay.
standpoint of, I think there's a real value to seeing. Me personally, I'm a very stubborn person. I know that about myself, but I, you know, very quickly I learned I wasn't going to be able, I there's certain way I want to do things, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to run a company the way I wanted to unless it was my own. That said, I think there's a lot of value in seeing, you know, this is why the company is such a big deal in my parents' lives and specifically my dad's life. I got some perspective on that, but it's you don't truly understand, and I believe me, I am absolutely still learning this lesson today, even how much value there is to going to work with, you know, the name that's on the back of your shirt is the same that's on the side of the building. And I think there are definitely days where I don't remember that that is there. And, you know, it's a good reminder for myself personally, like not everybody gets to do this. And this is a rare opportunity that, you know, you don't want to squander, you don't want to screw up. And I just really think there is a lot of value to seeing what the other side of the fence looks like. And that's really what I hope if my kids want to come into the business, I plan on implementing the same rule. So,
Okay, yeah, that's kind of where I was getting at. Okay. So
yeah.
you understand the rule. I think it sounds like you appreciate it, you benefited from it. And it sounds like if the next generation is up at bat, they're gonna walk the same walk, at least the same
Definitely
path.
will. Yes.
Okay, so you mentioned this before, Mike, that the you know obviously 2000 was a turning point year, but then since then the company's been on this positive track record and this positive run for you know to date for the next 25 years. What do you attribute that to? The successful run rate you've had leading up to now?
I think we're always innovating and we are always trying to be ahead of the curve. You know, in the paper industry as a whole is a really, really old industry, you know, too old in some instances. But I think from the standpoint of, you know, people in our industry tend to not think that there is new things in the, you know, specifically our real core business or core, our core sales is the corrugated side of the business. So for anybody listening, you know, think Amazon boxes, anything that you might buy from a Sam's Club or a Costco comes in a nice graphic box. And I would say 20, 25 years ago, when we were getting the company back off the ground, we put a lot of time and resources into innovation in corrugated. And really, today, there isn't a lot of people doing R&D research in the corrugated side of the business.
No.
We're one of the only people. So we continue to kind of drive innovation on this side, and that could be anything from automation to closed loop moisture control systems. And a lot of it in is we are not reinventing the wheel, but there is technology that was used in the past that gets forgotten about, and we're recycling that technology in some ways. So, you know, innovation has always kind of driven our company. And we're, you know, we're big enough, but we're small enough to be nimble and turn on a dime if we need to, if we find something and we go after it. But we really have a niche market that we tend to focus on that, you know, by the luck of the family, let's say, you know, 50 years ago, we were able to get into this core business for us, and we continue to drive that innovation in the core business, and it continues to be profitable for us.
And I think you started to answer my next question, but I'll ask it anyway. I think it relates to what you're talking about here. So if you look at some of your customers, I mean, they're not little companies. I mean, your customers are some of the largest entities in the world in the category. Yet here's Kohler Coating, a relatively small specialized firm by comparatively speaking.
Absolutely.
So in this world of massive manufacturers, how are you competing? Is it on the basis of innovation, or are there other things that you're doing as an organization to be able to compete with those and engage those big entities?
I think there's a couple aspects. I think the biggest one is the longevity aspect. We have been around for so long. I think people are comfortable with us from the standpoint of they know we're going to be here for the next generation. So that really plays to our strength there. I think the other is truthfully, we're willing to innovate. We're willing to go outside of the box for customers if they've got an idea and come up with a way to bring their ideas to life. So that's always been a big driver for us is, you know, we've continued to be customer centered and build off of the needs of that customer. And like you mentioned, you know, why would a company that's got, let's say, upwards of 100 to 200,000 employees trust a company like, you know, the size of ours is, you know, we say, if we say we're going to do something, we follow through with it, and we've got a reputation for doing that. That really is the biggest one is that people are putting hundreds of thousands of dollars to millions upon millions of dollars on some of these projects. And the reason they trust us with these large projects is because if we say we're going to do something, we're going to do it, and it's going to get there on time. And, you know, we continue to do that. And for the foreseeable future, we hope to continue to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly a case where, you know, in a world where oftentimes success is measured in 3 to 5 year sprints, you know, certain industries and corrugated, and I'd say the paper industry also. Maybe not necessarily so, you know, a longer view, longer horizons, and therefore an area where legacy matters. You know, legacy probably matters a lot when you say, hey, and we've been at this for, you know us, you know. If you don't know us, see the name over there on that piece of equipment, that's our name. That's been sitting there for 40 years.
And believe me, there are times I would tell you there are shiny object syndrome all over the place for us, but we're very conservative when it comes to which objects we go after. And that truly, you know, that has probably helped us stay alive as long as we have. And, you know, I'm sure we've missed out on some opportunities because we said, you know, hey, this isn't the right time, or this is too big of a stretch for us. But I think in the overall landscape, it has really helped us maintain and continue on for the next year, the next 5 years. And, you know, it's not that we aren't interested in getting bigger. We absolutely are, but it needs to be in the right way. I don't want this to be a fly by night, you know, type of deal where We grow so fast, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's too fast and we get out over our skis.
Yeah, I think that's an incredible point, especially in the context of innovation. You know, a lot of times people think innovation means you are going out on the ledge and chasing after, you know, everything that looks new and interesting. It's really equally important as having the discipline and the fortitude to say, here's what we're going to focus on. You know, you can still be innovative, but you know, being innovative doesn't mean being all over the board. It means we're going to pick a few areas and we're going to drive, you know?
Yeah, that's the key is picking those core tendencies that you know, where's the associated risk at, and is at the end of the day, is the juice worth the squeeze there? Finding out, and believe me, we are not perfect, but we definitely have. And again, this goes back to the original part of the conversation was I got to learn a lot about this early on in mistakes that we had made previously in generations past. And I saw that firsthand play out. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, I do not want to be the generation that drives the company into the ground, to be very blunt with you.
I've had this very same conversation.
Yeah, I'm sure. I am sure you have. I am sure.
So it was sadly probably the first half of my career was governed by fear. Don't screw up. Or if you
fear
do,
is a very powerful motivator, right?
It sure is, and it's. I wouldn't. It's an amazing emotion. It's an amazing human emotion. It's an important emotion. But gosh, it can be crippling at times if you let it get the best of you. And I've certainly been that guy.
I absolutely understand what you're saying and know exactly where you're coming from.
So let's talk about this. I mean, you know, we're talking about, you know, an industry in many ways or industries that you're serving, mature industries. So you're seeing, you know, equipment that's legacy. You're also seeing a talent pool that's often legacy where, you know, there's people on the job. They're not on the job for 1 or 2 years. They're on the job sometimes for 15 years, 20 years, sometimes even 30 years. And they're starting to, you know, come to the end of their days working. They're starting to retire and retire out of industry. So, you know, I've noticed this in manufacturing in general. There's a lot of this talent pool that's starting to move on. So when it comes to companies like Kohler Coating, how are you dealing with that? How are you looking and going about attracting that next generation of talent that will then, you know, drive the company in the coming 10, 20, 30 years?
Yeah, I think really that starts with succession planning for a company of our size. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned earlier, my dad's been driving the ship for the past 25 years here. So, you know, speaking to somebody who's done every job and, you know, today could walk in and do every job, you really have to start at a 30,000 square foot view and say, okay, where do we go when the guy who starts the company leaves? And the big thing for that was we started about, it was 6 or 7 years ago now. We sat down at our board meeting and we set a date for my dad's retirement and started to basically plan out what were the areas that were strengths or weaknesses that we knew we could not fulfill. And we needed to start hiring people for that. And I would tell you over the last 7 years, that's what we've been really focusing on because the industry knowledge that he has is about 40 years worth of knowledge. We started that plan about 7 years ago. And like I was saying, my dad's got about 40 years worth of industry knowledge that we can't just, you know, pull out and put into a computer overnight, let's say. Mm-hmm. So recently over the last 7 years have been really bringing in younger folks to start training underneath our top management level positions. And what that really looks like in the grand scheme is we've got electrical folks, mechanical folks that are all going underneath our lead engineers on the mechanical side, lead engineers on the electrical side. We've got process and field techs that are all training underneath any of the older generational people that we have within the company to basically pass down that knowledge. And for a company of our size, it's not as difficult because there just aren't as many people. But at the same time, it's hard to grab and pull everything out of somebody that's been doing a job for 40 years. So we wanted to get ahead of that as best as we could. And we've talked to a lot of our people internally trying to get an idea of, hey, when are you thinking about really stepping away? And is there a way that we can kind of plan for this a little bit? So we're trying our best, but it's never easy. And that's just kind of where we are today. But we continue to train and we continue to bring on new people to really backfill any of those positions.
That's really remarkable. I mean, I can honestly say, and I've maybe had 60 plus guests on the show. And I think maybe only one other time have I really heard of such a formalized focus on succession as you have in place in your circumstance, Mike. So that's really commendable. And you don't see that all the time. If anything, you often see a fire drill, you know.
We've looked at, and me personally, one of the tasks that I got back in probably 2017, 2018, it was to go and look at other family businesses to see what succession plans looked like for them. And this is outside of the industry. It's people just that we do locally to us even to see what they were doing and how they were operating. And the scary part was, is that most of them weren't thinking about it. And I learned far more than not. If they were, the plan in place was kind of a napkin idea that, you know, we drew out a couple things and it was not very structured.
Mm-hmm.
That really terrified me because I don't know what you do in that scenario.
Yeah.
I am a planner. Yeah. And my dad and I can't tell you the amount of discussions that we had over the years about it. It's for anything longevity, it's more, the more you can get ahead of it, the better, in my opinion.
I think that's great advice for anyone listening, for sure. So let's talk about that journey for a moment. As you're going through this, preparing for this transition in 2027, can you talk for a minute about how your relationship with your dad and how that's evolved as this process has gone forward? Because you're a son, but you're also, you know, a business partner. So reflect on that for a moment, if you would.
That is one of the most interesting dynamics that anybody in this position, and I know you personally can speak to this. There's a couple things that I would say. One, it is one of the greatest opportunities I have ever been afforded to have, is I get to go to work and work with my dad side by side every day. And it is one of the rarest opportunities that anybody will ever get. And I can tell you, you know, younger years for me and my dad, we bonded a lot over sports.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of our thing. And then that grew into, then we started talking about the business here and there. And now it's a, hey, this is what we talk about 24/7, which is good and bad. Okay. Sure. But what I will tell you is that my dad is my best friend. And he's probably the only person, and he does this exact thing to me, is, you know, when this is a family business, you've got ideas 24/7. There are days where I will get a phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning because my dad has an idea and he's up thinking about it. There are also days where I will wake up in the middle of the night because I have something I need to talk about. And there's only one person that will understand this or have the, let's say, remote consideration to even answer the phone in the middle of the night. But what I would say to you is that it's really strengthened our relationship from the standpoint of I wouldn't have it any other way. Mm-hmm. And although my dad is retiring in 2027, he's never going to fully retire. He's just not going to have his hand in the day-to-day operations of, you know, my hope for him when he does, you know, retire is that he gets to do all the fun stuff that he likes to do. My dad's an engineer by trade. His brain is always working. I just want him to get to do fun stuff and enjoy retirement while still being able to come in when he's got an idea, think about it, and that's my real hope for him in that regard. And I think from a standpoint, though, you know, there are opposite situations where it is an absolute nightmare for a father and son to be working together. And I've seen that firsthand.
Sure.
And unfortunately, it's in a lot of cases, it ruins the relationship. You know, we've got a rule too in the business that is like, you know, we have our knockout, drag out fights. You walk away, you got 24 hours, but the next following day, nothing happened and you're moving on because we don't have time for that. And it's a, you know, one, my mom wouldn't stand for it either. And it's just, that's always been a rule with us where we absolutely have disagreements. We absolutely have times where we are not going to see eye to eye on stuff. But one of the reasons why I say it's brought us closer together is because it forces us to communicate in ways that we wouldn't necessarily have to unless we were working together. So it's been a really interesting ride. I hope at some point it has to come to an end, but for the time that I have with him here working with me, I'm really going to enjoy it because I know, you know, whenever that time comes where he's officially really done, I will miss it and I won't know what to do. So I've got to really enjoy this while I got it.
There's so much that you said, so much to unpack, all great stuff, all great takeaways. And not surprisingly, so much resonated with my own journey, you know, and
I thought it would figured,
you know, so I think my dad officially retired in 2000, he passed in 2012, but I can honestly say, and I'm sure, you know, your situation with the same across those 12 years, he became a great mentor and advisor to me, you know.
Yeah.
And he'd often say, you know, and I don't really understand the technology of your business today and how things work. However, you know, I found that what I was coming to him with usually were people issues, relationship issues, things that he knew how to handle very well, you know? So he was able to dispense some great advice over those years. And, you know, I really cherish some of those discussions. Ironically, the impetus for me almost not coming into the business was because I have older siblings and I saw them kind of come through and not get along so well with dad. And I had a good relationship with my dad. So I'm like, I don't want to screw that up.
Right.
So yeah, there's definitely, you know, and I think you spoke to it very candidly, the potential to lock horns, you know, and sometimes, you know, emotions get the best of us, especially when we've got a family dynamic in play and a business dynamic in play. And that's, you know, that's part of what we're trying to sort out here, you know, is how to make them both work. Right. And when you do it, it's pretty darn amazing, you know.
There's no better feeling. There really isn't. And it's, I wish that for everybody. And I know this isn't for everybody. I think the best way to put it is that there are people that absolutely have a family business, and there's kind of two types of business. You either have a family business or a business family. We are absolutely a business family unapologetically. And, you know, we know that in our family, the business is usually coming first, and you don't survive four generations where it's not that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. I love that point. And speaking of that, I mean, so there's your dad, but you have a few other members in the family that are also involved in the business today. Talk about that dynamic. How do you make that work when you do it? And it's not just you and your dad. There's a few others working in and around the business. And, you know, how do those dynamics play out?
It's a really, so to give you some perspective on this, this is a question I get really often is I am the youngest on the Kohler side of the family, as well as on my mom's side of the family. So, and I take that back. I have a cousin who's like a couple months younger, irrelevant to the conversation, but I'm basically the youngest in anybody that works in the family business. I am the youngest person. I have a sister who's an accountant for us. I have a brother-in-law who's our CFO, and I have a cousin who is an engineer for us. All of them of which have known me as the annoying either little cousin or little brother to whoever for some time. But in a lot of regards, I had to prove myself to all three of them that I could go out and be a contributor and bring something to the table other than being the annoying little brother that I am. And that took some time. And I would tell you, it is not an easy route, because you're always having business is a very much what have you done for me lately type of environment. And I think for what family I do have in the business, I don't, you know, the same rule applies for them is that we absolutely have disagreements. There are absolutely times where we are not on the same page, but we navigate that as best as anybody could. And the following day, if we do have a disagreement, we're on a different, you know, page at that point. We're moving on and we're going down the road because we don't have the time to sit around and dwell on it. But for the most part, truthfully, I get along with all of my family members. I think for all of us, they saw the same things I did growing up, besides my brother-in-law. And he's been around so long at this point, for 15 years with us. Okay. He's very used to the family dynamic that is. And, you know, he absolutely has been brainwashed by us, either just by being unfortunately brought into this. So we all get along. I don't see any of us really having an issue with each other. And, you know, everybody's got the same goal is, you know, the business provides for all of our families.
Yep.
We want it to be successful. We need it to be successful, especially if we want to maintain the lifestyle that we live today, which I would say is very comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the ultimate overall goal for all of us is that, you know, in today's world, you know, we are so blessed beyond belief that, you know, we want to pass that down to the next generation. The only way we can do that is we have each other, and we need everybody on rowing the same direction and going in the same path. And I that's everybody's mindset here.
That's so awesome. That's really amazing, because, you know, a lot of times ego or pride or sometimes old scores or old wounds get in the way of doing, you know, what's right for the business, what's right for all. And it sounds like in your particular case, Mike, everybody's got a healthy understanding and appreciation and a healthy respect for each other's role and each other's contribution, and ultimately how to communicate when, you know, everyone's not seeing eye to eye, you know, which happens. It happens in every business. Yeah.
There's a big, I mean, look, I know, you know, my skill set is not, I am by no means an accountant. I am by no means going to be our lead engineer for, and, you know, I would love to contribute in a lot of different ways. I know there are areas that it is best that I stay out of it. And I am there for oversight from the standpoint of, this is the major decision that has to get made. You know, we either go this way or we go this way. But it is best for me to let other people in their areas of specificity run those areas and me be there for oversight. And I really value, because I know for a fact, I'm never going to be our bookkeeper that is going to make sure that we've crossed all of our T's and dotted all of our I's. That's not my area, right? But I try to keep in perspective that, you know, everybody has their area that they are best at, and I couldn't do this without them. I really could not. And you know, if there's one piece of advice, truthfully, that I could say to you, or to anybody that's listening to this, is that if you have a spouse or your partner, and, you know, my wife, I cannot stress this enough, is the most valuable business partner that I have. I learned that growing up. I haven't brought that up once, but for anybody out there that is going down this road, that's your partner in crime. That is the person that is going to be there when everybody else is, you know, gone. No matter what, you need to make sure that you are spending time with your wife, your husband, whoever, and making sure that that side of the business is on track. Because that was the best piece of advice I ever got from my dad. And, you know, I don't know if she would say this today, but I'm relatively certain she would. she's happy with the business. She loves being involved as much as she is, but you know, her role is very small comparatively, but it's huge in the other side of my life. And Sure. It is the reason that I can be here talking to you at this moment.
That's great.
So anybody out there, just remember, it's not just you doing all of this. Your spouse or whoever is the other side of that, making the ship go.
That's a great point, and you know, really insightful, and also one that doesn't come up too much when we talk about, you know, a lot of times we're talking more about the business and we forget that there's sometimes people that are ancillary to the business that play very key roles in our lives and how we shape ourselves and the direction we go. And I think you've really nailed that. One more question before we wrap up, and then a final. But when it comes to navigating the generational transition that you're going through now, you know, specific to that, Mike, what's one piece of advice? If there's a young person out there listening and they're about to embark on that journey, or they're in progress, right? They're going through that transition now, or they're the next in line for succession. What's one piece of advice you might give them about, you know, to help them navigate that move?
Every business is different. But what I would say to you is try to talk to other family businesses and see, you know, bounce ideas off of them. I had, like I said, I reached out to probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 businesses to see how they were handling it. And I read as much as I could about, you know, former, you know, generational giants such as the Ford family, the Carnegies, and you kind of, you know, you get an idea or some sense of what to do and what not to do. But, you know, if people don't want to deep dive that much, it is absolutely talking to people that do it on a regular basis. Find the company that's been around for 20 plus years, see what they're doing. And, you know, you would be amazed at how many people want to talk about this because they didn't know what to do or talk to, and they're willing to share the mistakes they made. And you really would be amazed at how much they will tell you about what went wrong and what they would do differently. Because I got more advice picking up the phone and just saying, "Hey, so-and-so, this is Mike Kohler. I was wondering if I could just bend your ear for a minute on, you know, I see you guys are going through this transitional period. Could I talk to you if you know, bounce a couple ideas off you?" And I mean, literally, Ed, I kid you not, I called, you know, somebody within a company, but it always led back to, "Let me get you in touch with our CEO. You can talk to him directly." And that was 90% of the people that I spoke to was, "You need to talk to our CEO because this is really where it starts." And talk to other small businesses, because the thing that I would say too is that it's really hard for somebody in a company that is running, you know, a 15,000 employee company to have some perspective of what it's like to have 100 employees or less, and trying to give you some advice as to how you should go about certain things. Try to find people that are similar in size to you and stature and talk to them.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. That really is. In fact, reminds me of an early guest, and I asked him, I said, "Hey, if you went to a look back of a younger self, what would you hope to have learned or understood?" He goes, "Boy, I wish there was more information out there. You know, I didn't know anything. I had to jump in and learn on the fly. I wish there was someone I could have talked to figure this out." And he's like, "There was really no one around at the time." So, but that kind of resonates with what you just said. Last question, Mike, if anybody listening wanted to learn more about you, talk to you, or learn more about Kohler Coding, what's the best way for them to connect?
Yeah, I'd say our website's kohlercoding.com. And then the big one is LinkedIn. I mean, we post regularly on LinkedIn, just talking about the industry. And please give us a follow if you come across our page. And we just crossed the 2,000 follower mark here recently. So we're pretty pumped about that. And we hope to grow that page a little bit more. So
that's
please.
A great milestone. Awesome. Well, Mike, thanks so much. Your story is incredible. I mean, it's all about legacy meeting leadership and what it takes to run a family business through more than a century of change and challenges and new opportunities. Thank you so much for sharing the history, the challenges, for speaking with such candor as you have through this interview, and talking about what you're learning and what you're doing to prepare as you take over as the next generation. Again, we've been speaking with Mike Kohler of Kohler Coding. And I'm your host, Ed Dalia. And this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. I really appreciate it.
Same here, bud. Take care.
See ya.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.dalianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at dalianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed Dalia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.